Today is Tuesday. It is January 18th. The year is 2022. I'm Jim McPherson, and today I'll be reading from the front pages of the Hartford Courant and the New York Times, starting with a look at the photos on the front pages of these two newspapers. Let's begin with the Hartford Courant, where above the fold and across three of the four columns, we have a picture of two young individuals who appear to be working intently on a project in front of them on a table. Both are wearing masks, and the caption tells us that this is Mariah Cabano, a 12-year-old author and activist from New Britain, who works with her brother Tyshawn Yupp, 6, at a Martin Luther King Jr. Day event held at the New Britain Museum of American Art. Cabano has written two inspirational books for children, I've Been Told and Beauty Begins With Me, both dealing with love, respect, and the importance of how a person acts rather than looks. And then below that, we have a picture of two young girls. They're back to us, but they have long, flowing hair, looking at a picture of Martin Luther King Jr. And the caption tells us that this is Abby Marie, 12, and Katie Marie, 10, of West Hartford. Listen to a historic speech by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on a screen at the New Britain Museum of American Art, where visitors enjoyed free admission and activities. Below that, we have a picture of a couple of women who are clearly pregnant. And the caption here we'll get to in just a moment. The headline for this story is Physicians Plead for Pregnant Women to Get Fully Vaccinated. We can't see any of the faces clearly, but we can certainly tell that they are expecting a child. Two obstetricians groups are recommending COVID-19 shots for all pregnant women, citing concerns over rising cases and low vaccination rates. On now to the photos on the front page of the New York Times, where above the fold and across four of the six columns, we have a picture of a throng of people out on the street. They are marching. There's an American flag flying to the right, and they're holding a banner that proclaims something for voting rights. It's hard to read it because it's cropped out. But the caption tells us that these people outside, all of them clearly masked, marching for King and voting rights. Martin Luther King III and members of his family led a memorial and a rally for voting reforms in Washington on Monday. And then below that, we have a picture of a pool that appears to be empty with debris on the bottom of it. And then there's the building itself. It's a modern type building, and we're seeing just a few floors of it. And it's pretty much wall-to-wall windows in between the floors. This month, the city of Miami Beach recommended demolition of the Deauville after a report found the building to be unsafe. A historic Miami Beach hotel falls prey to neglect and time, is the headline on this particular story. Those are the photos on the front pages of the two morning newspapers from which we'll be reading. And as long as we're on the front page of the New York Times, let's go to their lead story. It runs under the headline, China's Births Hit Historic Low, a Political Problem for Beijing. The demographic crisis, a challenge to the economy, also signals a limit to the reach of the government, which has struggled recently to grow the population. This by Stephen Lee Myers and Alexander Stevenson. China announced on Monday that its birth rate plummeted for a fifth straight year in 2021, moving the world's most populous country closer to the potentially seismic moment when its population will begin to shrink and hastening a demographic shift that could undermine its economy and even its political stability. The falling birth rate, coupled with the increased life expectancy that has accompanied China's economic transformation over the last four decades, means the number of people of working age relative to the growing number of people too old to work has continued to decline. That could result in labor shortages, which could hamper economic growth and reduce the tax revenue needed to support an aging society. The situation is creating a huge political problem for Beijing, which is already facing economic headwinds. Among the demographic data, the country reported on Monday that growth in the last quarter of the year slowed to 4%. China's ruling Communist Party has taken steps to address the birth rate decline by relaxing its notorious one-child policy, first allowing two children in 2016 and as many as three since last year. It is also offering incentives to young families and promising improvement in workplace rules and early education. None have been able to reverse a stark fact. An increasing number of Chinese women don't want children. Quote, China is facing a demographic crisis that is beyond the imagination of the Chinese authorities and the international community, unquote, said Yi Fujian, a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, who has long argued that China's Communist Party leaders were underreporting population figures. The number of births fell to 10.6 million in 2021, compared with 12 million the year before, according to figures reported on Monday by the National Bureau of Statistics. That was fewer even than the number in 1961, when the Great Leap Forward, Mao Zedong's economic policy, resulted in widespread famine and death. For the first time since the Great Leap Forward, China's population soon could begin to contract. The number of people who died in 2021, 10.1 million, approached the number of those born, according to figures announced on Monday. Some demographers say the peak may already have occurred. And now on to the lead story of national interest on the front page of today's Hartford Current. The headline, Biden, Commit to King's Mission. The subhead, Voting Rights, Justice are Key Themes of Messages on Holiday. This by Jeff Martin and Michael Warren of the Associated Press, and it is datelined Atlanta. Americans must commit to the unfinished work of Martin Luther King Jr., delivering jobs and justice and protecting the, quote, sacred right to vote, a right from which all other rights flow, unquote, President Joe Biden said Monday. Martin Luther King Day is a moment when a mirror is held up to America, the president said in a video address, quote, it's time for every elected official in America to make it clear where they stand, unquote, Biden said. Quoting again, it's time for every American to stand up, speak out, be heard. Where do you stand, unquote. Major holiday events included marches in several cities and the annual Martin Luther King Jr. service at the slain civil rights leader Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, where Senator Raphael Warnock, Democrat of Georgia, is the senior pastor. Pews have been packed by politicians in past years, but given the pandemic, many offered pre-recorded speeches. This holiday marks what would have been the 93rd birthday of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., who was 39 when he was assassinated in 1968, while helping sanitation workers strike for better pay and workplace safety in Memphis, Tennessee. King's oldest son criticized Biden and Congress as a whole on Monday for failing to pass voting rights legislation, even as 19 GOP-led states have made it harder to vote in response to former President Donald Trump's false claims about election rigging. Quote, you were successful with infrastructure, which is a great thing, but we need you to use that same energy to ensure that all Americans have the same unencumbered right to vote, unquote, Martin Luther King III said. Senate Republicans remain unified in opposition to the Democrats' voting bills. Biden described their stonewalling as part of a, quote, true attack on our democracy, from the January 6th insurrection to the onslaught of Republican anti-voting laws in a number of states, unquote. Quoting again, it's no longer just about who gets to vote, it's about who gets to count the vote, and whether your vote counts at all. It's about two insidious things, voter suppression and election subversion, unquote, Biden said. Vice President Kamala Harris spoke virtually to the Ebenezer service, saying that, quote, in Georgia and across our nation, anti-voter laws are being passed that could make it more difficult for as many as 55 million Americans to vote. That is one out of six people in our country, unquote. Quoting again, we know that this assault on our freedom to vote will be felt by every American in every community, in every political party, unquote, she said. Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, the Senate's only black Republican, countered with a series of King Day-themed videos he said would emphasize positive developments on civil rights. Scott sidestepped criticism about GOP actions and accused Democrats of labeling his party members as racists. Quote, "To compare or conflate people who oppose his positions as being racists and traitors to the country is not only insulting and infuriating, it's dead wrong," unquote, Scott told the Associated Press. Warnock, now running for re-election as Georgia's first black senator, said in his speech to the sparse crowd at Ebenezer that, quote, "Everybody loves Dr. King, they just don't always love what he represents," unquote. Quoting again, "Let the word go forth. You cannot remember Dr. King and dismember his legacy at the same time," unquote, Warnock said. Quoting once more, "If you will speak his name, you have to stand up for voting rights, you have to stand up on behalf of the oppressed and the disenfranchised," unquote. King, who delivered his historic I Have a Dream speech while leading the 1963 March on Washington and was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964, considered racial equality inseparable from alleviating poverty and stopping war. "The U.S. economy, quote, has never worked fairly for black Americans, or really for any American of color," unquote, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said in a speech delivered Monday, one of many by national leaders acknowledging unmet needs for racial equality on Martin Luther King Day. Yellen referred to King's famous speech in remarks she recorded for delivery at the Reverend Al Sharpton's National Action Network breakfast in Washington, noting the financial metaphor he used when describing the Founding Fathers' promises of equality. King said on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial that, quote, "America has defaulted on its promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned," unquote. He called it, quote, "a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds, but we refuse to believe the Bank of Justice is bankrupt," unquote. Back now to the front page of the New York Times for this headline, "The hostages escaped, but synagogues ask, how can they be more secure?" The subhead, "The hostages whispered instructions and edged closer to the door, part of invaluable training that anxious congregations are using." This article by Ruth Graham, J.C. Fortin, and Troy Closen. It is Dateline Dallas. For 11 hours, the hostages talked to the ranting gunman, hoping that he would see them as human. They whispered about strategies, and they surreptitiously edged toward the nearest exit. But when the gunman ordered the men to kneel, they decided they had to take action. The rabbi grabbed a chair and heaved it at the gunman. The hostages ran for the door. The rabbi, Charlie Citron Walker, has been called heroic for his cool head and the decisive leadership that led to the dramatic escape of three hostages on Saturday from Congregation Beth Israel of Colleyville in suburban Fort Worth, Texas. By his own account on Monday and that of another hostage, Jeffrey Cohen, it was years of security training, prompted by threats to synagogues, that allowed them to escape. In an interview, Rabbi Citron Walker said that he had taken part in at least four separate trainings in recent years from the Colleyville Police Department, the FBI, the Anti-Defamation League, and the Secure Community Network, a nonprofit group that provides security resources to Jewish institutions nationally. The sessions taught him that, quote, "If you get in this situation, you have to do whatever you can," unquote, he said. Quoting again, "It gave me the courage and the sensibility to act when we were able," unquote. Acts of sudden violence have become a grim part of American life. In cities and small towns, churches, schools, and concert venues have become the settings for terrifying scenes of mayhem. Synagogues have been even more acutely aware of threats since 2018, when an assailant armed with an AR-15-style assault rifle and multiple handguns entered the Tree of Life congregation in Pittsburgh on a Saturday morning. The man, who was shouting anti-Semitic slurs, killed 11 people. Quote, "The Jewish community security world is looked at as pre-Tree of Life and post-Tree of Life," unquote, said Stuart Frisch, a national training and exercise advisor at the Secure Community Network. And now, from the World and Nation pages of the Hartford Current, former president's arrival adds to tension in Ukraine. Poroshenko mired in a long-standing feud with Zelensky. This by Andrew E. Kramer of the New York Times. It is datelined Kiev, Ukraine. Ukraine's former president and a leading opposition figure, Petro Poroshenko, returned Monday to Kiev, where he faced possible arrest, adding internal political turmoil to the mounting threat of a Russian invasion. Poroshenko's return brought into focus Ukraine's wobbly politics, which were mostly in the background in recent weeks as the United States and its allies in Europe scrambled to forestall Russian military intervention. He arrived Monday morning at Kiev's Zuliani Airport, where a scene erupted at passport control. Poroshenko said border guards for some time refused to allow him to enter the country, although he was due to appear at a court hearing on charges of high treason and supporting terrorism later in the day in Kiev. He later passed the border control, but said authorities had confiscated his passport. Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, had been embroiled in a long-running feud with Poroshenko, who was president from 2014 to 2019. His appearance in the capital, where he once governed, comes after a week of mostly futile negotiations between Russia and the West, seeking a solution to tense disagreements over the security of Eastern Europe. And in a related story from the front page of the New York Times, Russia thins out its embassy in Ukraine, a possible clue to Putin's next move. The slow evacuation may be part propaganda, part preparation for a conflict, or part feint, Ukrainian and U.S. officials say. It could be all three. This by Michael Schwitz and David E. Sanger. The week before, intensive diplomatic meetings began over the buildup of Russian troops on the Ukrainian border. American and Ukrainian officials watched from afar as Russia began emptying out its embassy in Kiev, the Ukrainian capital. On January 5th, 18 people, mostly the children and wives of Russian diplomats, boarded buses and embarked on a 15-hour drive home to Moscow, according to a senior Ukrainian security official. About 30 more followed in the next few days from Kiev and a consulate in Lviv in western Ukraine. Diplomats at two other Russian consulates have been told to prepare to leave Ukraine, the security official said, speaking on the condition of anonymity to discuss national security matters. How to interpret the evacuation has become part of the mystery of divining the next play by President Vladimir V. Putin of Russia. Thinning out the Russian embassy may be part propaganda, part preparation for a looming conflict, or part feint, Ukrainian and U.S. officials say. It could be all three. Russia's foreign ministry said on Tuesday that its embassy in Kiev was, quote, operating as usual, unquote, the Interfax news agency reported. In recent days, the slow departures, which the Russians most likely knew that the Americans and the Ukrainians would see, have become part of the puzzle of what happens next.